This is the sermon or sharing portion of the Albertson Memorial Spiritualist Church service on Sunday, February 23rd, 2014.
So, as you may know, later this afternoon I'm giving a workshop on self-esteem. So that has been on my mind. It's actually on my mind a lot because in my work as a hypnotist and as a psychic medium, I see a lot of people who are coming to me with symptoms of an unhealthy self-esteem. And those symptoms are overweight, addiction, passive-aggressive behavior, inability to sustain relationships, feeling disappointed in general, lacking confidence. I've come to the conclusion over the years that what's wrong with everything, everywhere, is a flaw in our self-regard, in our self-perception, or our self-esteem. There are a lot of words for this, so I'm going to use the word self-esteem to mean how we perceive ourselves. All of the clients that come to me, and even from my own personal experience, no matter what they're coming for, if we dig deep enough, talk long enough, comes all the way back down to this problem. The person, the man, the woman, the child, the adult, doesn't matter, it's been universal across my client base, feels somehow that they don't belong, that they don't deserve to be here, they don't deserve to be heard, or that there is something fundamentally wrong with them. This was a problem that I myself worked on for a long, long, long period of time. Hi. Many years ago, when I was married, this was probably about 25 years ago, I was married to a really wonderful man who had a friend who had previously been a romantic partner of his, but they were both mature enough to have moved past their differences as sweethearts and just simply become friends. And I was insanely jealous of this woman. She was beautiful, tall, shapely. Parents lived in Switzerland, so she traveled to Europe all the time. She spoke fluent French. She was just so much cooler than I was in every way. You know, when I felt next to her flat-chested and fat. It just was, I was constantly comparing myself to this extraordinary creature. And, you know, there was nothing going on between them. My husband married me. He didn't marry her. And yet, my self-esteem was so cracked that I couldn't accept their relationship for what it was. I couldn't accept her for who she was, or myself for who I was. And our marriage didn't last. And while I won't take total responsibility for the dissolution of it, I know that my self-esteem was a huge part of that. I required of my husband, because of how I felt about myself, that he reassure me constantly that I was lovable, attractive enough, worth being married to, and it's just an awful lot of a burden to hand to somebody else. So that was a long time ago, and I had an opportunity to see just last week how much I've grown. I was out to dinner with my current sweetheart, who also happens to have in his past an extraordinarily beautiful woman who he was engaged to. And she is tall, blonde, shapely, and she makes six figures a year. I do not, by the way. And we were having dinner, and she came up in the conversation for some reason. I can't remember why. And he made a comment that all of his friends had told him, "Oh, you'll never get her. She's way out of your league." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" And he said, "Well, you know, she still is the most beautiful woman in town." And I just sat, 25 years ago, that would have killed me. That would have sat in my heart and my gut for weeks. I might have punished him passive-aggressively about it. I might have smoked a pack of cigarettes, drank too much. That's how I handled my low self-esteem back then. But now that I'm a little bit more grown up, I was able to sit back and watch him squirm when I said, present company accepted, of course. Because he wasn't purposely being insensitive. It just sort of came out, because she probably is the most beautiful woman in town. And I had so much fun watching him backpedal. That was so much fun. But his comment didn't have the hooks in me that it did the sort of thing would in my past. And the reason why is because I have finally found what God gave me. I'm now able to see in myself what God gave me. And if I can see that in myself, I can see it in other people. I can see it in this. She is beautiful. God bless her. She is a beautiful woman. I'm not threatened by that anymore, because I see that I have an equal wonder in me that she has in her. Nobody is better than I am. That sounds boastful, right? But I don't mean it to be. Nobody is, they may be more attractive, they may be wealthier, they may have better luck, but inherently, nobody is better or worse than I am. And when I finally understood that, it was like this giant burden was lifted from my heart. I don't need to prove myself or compare myself, because now I have a healthy self-esteem. I know and I can see my own wonder. And I know that to me, even saying it out loud, a part of me goes, shut up, you can't say those things out loud. Apparently the only way we can boast about ourselves is if we're achieving something great athletically. But a regular person, especially a woman, God forbid you stand up and say, I'm great. People go, yeah, right. But there's a difference. There's a difference I want to define between healthy self-esteem and pride. Because if pride comes from an arrogant place or is boastful, that's the kind that does goeth before a fall, because that is rooted in insecurity and unhealthy self-esteem. Somehow, humility, the state of being humble, which the Oxford English Dictionary defines as having a low opinion of yourself, has become equated with holiness or spirituality. I think that's a misperception, because if we go through our lives downplaying ourselves or our gifts or what's unique and beautiful about us, we are trying to downplay or effectively downplaying the unique divinity, godliness, and holiness that we all inherently have just because we're alive. I was looking up definitions of self-esteem on the internet, sort of just for fun, and I came to one that I actually liked. This is according to psychologist Nathaniel Brandon. Self-esteem is the sum of self-confidence, which is a feeling of personal capacity, and self-respect, which is a feeling of personal worth. So this psychologist says that self-esteem is the sum of self-confidence and self-respect. It exists as a consequence of the implicit judgment that every person has of their ability to face life's challenges, to understand and solve problems, and their right to happiness and respect. So I like this definition, but it's built on what we think we deserve. What is my perception of my right to happiness? What's my perception of my right to being treated respectfully? So it's recognizing, yes, self-confidence and self-respect, but I think we have to go even a little further inward than that, or a little further upward maybe, and recognize that who we are, that I am sense, is perfect. In my work as a hypnotist, as I mentioned earlier, I see a lot of people for weight loss and quitting smoking, addictions, this sort of thing. And one of the things that we do in the kind of hypnosis that I practice is something called regression. Now, regression isn't, it's a little controversial. Not every hypnotist does it. I do it because I think it works. And one of the things that I do with regression is what we call regression to the initial sensitizing event, or the ISE. And the ISE means that moment in time when you first perceive something, you can be hours old, you can be days old, you could be years old. And because of the way the subconscious mind works, everything that has ever happened to us is recorded. Whether or not we realize we're making a memory, it's all recorded. This is why, under very strict protocols, we can use hypnosis and witness testimony in courts. So in the practice of regression and hypnosis, we bring the client back to the first moment they created an understanding about something. And the nature of the conscious mind is then to gather evidence to support that perception and that belief. That's just the way that our minds work. So I want to tell you about one woman that I was working with for years. She'd come in about once a year. She had 100 pounds plus to lose. And she would come in and we'd do the first regular session, which is what we call just general suggestion. You know, you're now choosing healthy foods, just in a hypnotic state, hearing and assimilating new behaviors. And she'd come once and then she'd report, you know, I'm losing all this weight, everything's great. And then I'd get a call from her a year later, oh, it all came back, we have to do this again. We did this a couple, two, three times. And then I finally asked her to commit three sessions in a row, once a week for 3 weeks. So the first week we did the general suggestion again, then we did some other work, some parts therapy, and the third time we met, we did this regression work. And in this wonderful session, this woman recollected a time under hypnosis when she was 2 years old, just about two, and her mother came home with her new baby brother. And there was all of this wonderful warmth and, you know, joy and neighbors coming over with casseroles and all this kind of great stuff going on and the baby and the ooing and the aahing. And she was made to feel part of this. She was brought into it, you know, holding the baby brother. And then wanting to still participate and wanting to help, she went to go get the formula that was heating up on the stove. Her mother saw her do this, slapped her hand away and shouted at her. Now, we as adults know, of course, hot, hot, you know, we don't touch this. But this little child created a perception, a misperception. Well, maybe it wasn't a misperception. Maybe that's what she really saw, that there's a connection between food, affection, and rejection. Now, at 2 years old, we don't have enough vocabulary. Maybe we don't have enough self-awareness to say, what'd you do that for? You know, that hurt. That hurt my feelings. She just made this connection. And then that seed is planted. And then subsequent sensitizing events mean the conscious mind is going to gather evidence to say, see, that's right. There is a connection between food, affection, and rejection. But we just moved ahead a little bit, and there was one more time when she had her mother's undivided attention, and then the baby cried, and she said, oh, I have to go feed your brother, and she walked away. And the little girl, my client as a little girl, went, aha, there is a connection between food, affection, and rejection. And that became something that created a belief about herself and the world and the way the world worked that caused her all throughout the rest of her life to lose weight, gain weight, lose weight, gain weight, fall in love, feel rejected, fall in love, and they were just, it was timed so perfectly. Now, I hadn't seen her in about a year and a half, and I just ran into her. She's 120 pounds. She's kept the weight off for a year and a half. She's in love. She's moving in with her sweetheart. This woman is 65, and she looks like a teenager. She's so happy because finally she was able to correct a flaw in her self-perception that said, you don't deserve affection, and you don't deserve food. And if they happen to come together at the same time, you're really screwed. So she, with some of the, and we're going to do some of this initial sensitizing event work in the workshop today if you're interested in it. I'm going to show you how to do it, and we might do one right here, but I'm certainly going to show you how to do it. And you know, some of our initial sensitizing events are, of course, they're traumatic. Some people do genuinely have childhoods that have filled with abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, or bullied as children. And sometimes that little rotten seed of low self-esteem starts from something that's completely innocent. So in the regression work, just to conclude this story, we brought her back to that initial event with the abilities and the mind of an adult to re-perceive that situation. We can do this in hypnosis because there's no time in the subconscious mind. so we can correct things that happened in the past. They were corrected, and it worked. And all through the future for her, every day that happens now, her conscious mind is going to gather evidence to support the new belief that she's okay, that there's nothing wrong with her, and that she deserves affection, and she deserves to feed herself healthy food. So there's a lot of reasons why we have the notion that there's something wrong with us, or that we're not perfect, or that we shouldn't call attention to ourselves in one way or another. But I think it's time to reverse this trend. I think we should celebrate how perfect we are. I'm not talking about our minds, our intellects, our bodies. I'm talking about who we are inherently. If you're a spiritualist, or if you're anything but an atheist, you probably believe that the spirit survives death. The expiration of the body and the mind and the personality, the spirit survives. This is the part of us that is perfect. It's energy, maybe we can think of it that way. It's a part that can't be created, can't be destroyed, can be transformed. But if I like to think of my spirit as the part of me that is God, God's thought of himself, herself, the creator self, that's in me and that's in everybody else. And if I can see this and believe it, then I'm not going to compare myself with more beautiful women, richer women, someone more athletic than I am, anything like this. I've been on this challenge my entire life. And I would go after these crazy achievements and accomplishments to satisfy this feeling that really just took a shift in my self-perception to finally get. And our spirits are timeless. I look at my 52-year-old self in the mirror and I go, what? Wasn't I just 30? How did that happen? I had this discussion with my mother, God bless her. She's 76 now, and we were talking about how we feel the same. We don't think the same. We have different reactions, more mature responses to things, but we feel the same. Innately, I feel like I am the same person. And when I do work with spirit communication, the spirit people come through with this constant message that they're eternal, that life and who we are, the I am-ness of us, the being-ness of us, is complete. It's already whole. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing broken there. There's nothing that needs correction in our spirit. So I just want to share with you two specific messages from spirit people that have happened, that have come through in the recent past. I have a regular client by the name of April, and her grandmother came through in one fairly recent reading, and she said this. I can't take credit for these words. I wish I could, but this is what she said. There are two ways being alive, physically and in the spirit. The spirit doesn't need to create because it's already created. So identifying with the spirit is better than identifying with the body or the mind. Your job is to recognize your spirit and recognize that it doesn't need correction or action. You already know your spirit. You've just forgotten its wholeness and perfection. Let your prayer be to remember who you really are and to remember that your mind is simply a tool and your body in the physical world simply a place to use that tool. The mind is a bridge between who we might remember ourselves to be and what we can actually do in the world. We have to choose which aspect of ourselves to put our energy into. We have to choose to focus on the spirit, remembering that it isn't broken and doesn't need fixing. If we perceive brokenness or incompleteness, that's the mind focusing on itself. Now, my friend April is in a constant battle with her weight. She's beautiful. She looks slim, slender. She's a talented artist and jeweler. But there's something she perceives to be missing in her completeness and wholeness. And this is why she keeps coming for readings. We did the hypnosis round already. She lost weight. She looks fabulous. But she still feels like something is missing. So her grandmother in spirit giving her this message, I hope will help her shift her attention away from her need to prove herself with her weight and her body, and to just accept and love that there's nothing wrong with her, and to put her energy in the right place. The last one I want to read is from a client of mine by the name of Robert, and his uncle came through in spirit, and his uncle was a genius, Mensa-level super engineer crazy genius. He says, the mind has creative ability and creative power, and we can do amazing things with the mind, but we have to realize that it's not the almighty. The spirit is beyond creation and beyond analysis, so it's important to realize that the mind is something that comes along for the ride. The spirit is the alpha and omega. It is always there and always perfect, so our mind should serve our spirit, not serve itself. The mind can help the body and help create the lifestyle, but the mind should not simply serve itself. This man, by the way, suffered from Alzheimer's, so he lost at the end what was most valuable to him, which was his intellect, or lost the ability to function in that way. He went on to say, when the mind serves itself, we think that intellectual advancement is the way to measure goodness or betterness. We can use our minds to bring great things into our lives, but sometimes we do that because we think something is missing or broken. This can lead to fear, feelings of inadequacy, and all kinds of problems. Then the mind goes into a more intense version of striving towards betterness by fixing what it determines to be wrong or broken. All the while, the spirit, which is the real engine of life, is running along perfectly without any flaws. The spirit doesn't need fixing because it's perfect. The mind, when it serves itself instead of the spirit, focuses on the incomplete power of the intellect. When the mind serves the spirit, those corrections and drives all fall away, and we know inner harmony, and then we can see and experience harmony everywhere. The mind doesn't create harmony. The mind thinks it can create harmony when it's serving itself. When it serves the spirit, it is recognizing divine harmony, and that's a lot less work. So the next time you feel down, inadequate, anxious, frustrated, fat, poor, or flat-chested, just remember, there's nothing wrong with you. You're perfect. Turn your attention away, if you can, to the best of your ability from those comparisons, and recognize that there's nothing that needs to be fixed. There's nothing about you that can be made better. There's nothing about who you are that needs improvement. You're perfect. Thank you.